The program you are about to hear has been produced, researched, compiled, and presented by TY students from across the Ocean FM franchise area. The group of 10 students took part in a week-long training program at Ocean FM, and the following is their introduction into the world of radio.
My name is Shane Hanbury, and I'm a part of a group of TY students that have been on work experience at Ocean FM for the past week. From between now and the top of the hour, we are going to present to you a very special program that has been researched, compiled, and edited by our TY group. Please stay with us for this festive edition of TY Radio right here on Ocean FM.
TY Radio on Ocean FM.
I am James Broderick here, and I'm also here with my fellow co-hosts Shane Hanbury and Conor Hare. I'm here to talk politics with Leitrim Independent Councillor James Gilmartin. We know that you own an organic farm out in Leitrim, so can you suppose tell us the benefits to the environment that organic farm would have?
I will indeed, and I suppose just to point out, when you say you own it, I'd be a big believer in that you're a steward of the land, that you have it for a certain period of time, you know, you pass it on then to whoever's coming after you. So I suppose the organic farm, traditionally we would be what's called a suckler and sheep farm. So that's rearing calves off your suckler cows every year, and then mid-season lamb and flock. The reason I went into organics, well, there's a couple of reasons. Obviously, when you're farming, and I'm a big believer, you should always farm with your head, your heart, and your pocket. So it has to, you know, work right in your head. You have to feel right about it, but it has to be profitable. So if it's not profitable, it's not. It's only a hobby, and I don't believe in that. Because it just won't last in the long term. So the organic end of it is quite profitable in the sense there's quite a good payment per hectare for farming organically. Alongside that, it also goes with my ideals, and probably ahead of it being profitable, the meat that you're producing and the lamb that you're producing is completely chemical free, and to me that's very, very important. As we go on, and we can see how, you know, some farming industries are looking at intensification, more, and that leads to productivity being the key word, but profitability is what I'd be concerned about. It kind of just fits with me well in that regard.
So you're a very young politician, obviously, compared to your competition as well. So do you feel that young people would maybe be able to connect with you more, knowing that you're closer to their age and you're probably a bit more relatable to them?
Thank you very much for calling me young. I always like when I hear that. It does help me. My job as a secondary school teacher as well, it would help me a lot in that regard. I'm used to dealing with young people a lot, and I'm very aware of their needs and their issues and where there's places for support, and also where to, you know, push them on and try and improve things for them. So I do think it resonates well with people my age, and also my interests and all the other variables that I'm involved with.
You're very passionate about sports. Obviously, you played for Glencarmel and Hamilton for a few years, and you're part of that 4-in-a-row winning team. So do you, I suppose, especially about where I live in Templeboy, there's isolation, particularly with urbanisation, and tough to keep up with all the town clubs when you're playing. So do you know of any ways you'll be able to combat rural GA club isolation?
Very, very good question there, James. And there's a couple of points in it I'd like to address. The first one is about sport in general. I was very fortunate growing up that I was, my parents, my mum and my dad were very much, they pushed all of us into every type of sport that there was. I used to do swimming and athletics and hurling. I wasn't fierce at the hurling, but I'd run around, and Gaelic was my passion. I played soccer, and I the list goes on. And for me, sport is a wonderful, wonderful, important part of life growing up, irregardless of what sport it is. I happen to be, you know, reasonable at Gaelic, as it transpired, but that's the point I'll be trying to make to all young people, is be involved in something, even if it's just going to the gym. A good friend of mine, Francie Boylan, we'd often say, you know, when you come back from exercise, you mightn't feel like going to do it, but you never, ever, ever come back saying, I'm sorry I went and did that. Of course, unless you got injured or something, but generally, it's you know, there's a huge benefit to it. And then there's the social thing with your friends. And if I look back over my life, and I still would exercise a lot, not to this extent that you need to be killing yourself, but it would be a mainstay in my life for my well-being, and I would factor it in. I suppose looking at the point of rural isolation in relation to keeping up with the town's teams, that is a big issue. It's something that clubs need to look at. I mean, rural clubs are very special places. The people who are involved in them, they really care about the GA, and they're aware of the importance of having a club in the area. So I think it's very important in the areas where you're living that all people who are involved, who have young people that might be using from the under fives, under eights, under the whole way up, get involved in that, because that's really where it's at. It's not about being, like, success is how you view it. I mean, obviously we all want to win county titles, and I was fortunate to have done that. But I wouldn't look back over my sporting life and saying winning them were the important things. The important things was the mates and the friends and the social benefits you had from that. So I guess rural clubs do need help in that regard. I mean, and how you compare, you know, people would say winning a junior championship or winning an intermediate is not senior. That's not the important thing. The important thing is that you're taking part and that you're turning up every day.
You were campaigning for Marion Harkin during her general election campaign. What were the big differences you noticed between the local election and going on to a national election stage then?
Different animals altogether. I mean, the most obvious one is the lead-in time. So for this particular election, we had 3 weeks to kind of get out and canvass people. For my own election, I started 14 weeks out from the actual date. In June, I started maybe sometime in February. The area then is massive, trying to get to all the people. Like, I mean, you look at when you're going to run for the election, I think in North Leitrim, somewhere in the region of 6,000 people was what had to be the target to get to. I mean, we weren't going to get to all of them. The local election, you had 90,000 of an electorate, and I think maybe somewhere in the region of 50,000 voted. They're very rough figures. So you can't get to everyone. You need a big team behind you. You need to, you know, yeah, there's, you also have to get out on media. You have to be present the whole time. Mm. You're relying on a lot of other people to kind of carry the message forward for you. And that would be the big, big issue, I would say. And also, it's, you know, to use the was one of the elected members who got elected recently in the last election said to me, James, this is senior hurling. It's not like local level. You can get, you can get involved. You can get, you know, you learn your trade as you go on. People have certain expectations of a TD, and rightly so. They're representing a whole area with a whole set of values. So it is a step up in that regard as well. Now, Marion, to give her credit, she's a very, very capable politician. She ran, this is her seventh campaign and her sixth success in a row, which is fair going. We couldn't, any of us, not even get into that. Someone said the Dubs could only get five in a row. But she ran in 1999 first for an MEP, wasn't successful. Then she got in as a TD in 2002. Then she was three times as an independent MEP. You're talking about two counties or two and a half counties for the general election. There was 15 counties that had to be canvassed for the Europeans. So to get elected as an MEP in that regard and to continue to get elected, that's the important thing. You know, anyone can be successful once, is to come back at the whole time. It means a lot. And then I think that stood to her then in this last election too, that people knew what they were getting.
Hi, James, Connor here. You're obviously a first time candidate, so what do you feel are your biggest strengths as a politician?
A very good question there at the start. Strengths as a politician, I guess I've a lot of different interests and concerns that would cover a wide variety of areas in the region, and as such then that would be a good representation of a lot of the people who I'd be asking for votes for. As I mentioned earlier on to James, I'm a farmer, I'm a teacher, most importantly I'm a father with three young kids, and I'm very aware of the needs that are on young families at the moment. I'm also heavily involved in environmentalism in the area, and we probably will talk about that in a while in relation to trying to stop gold mining and other extractive industries that are happening. So I think I have a lot of, if you want to call them strengths, experience, life experience. But I also have youth on my side. I mean, comparable for politics. I'm 45, which I think is quite young. Some people mightn't agree with me. But in a political sense, it is. And I think I have that energy to bring as well, which is very important. And it's a new voice, which people like. And as long as you're saying the right things most of the time, you can't let the tail wag the dog and try and be all things to all people either. You have to have your own set of values. But to follow through on that is important to me.
What are your main aims during your first term?
My main aims? Well, there's numerous aims. I mean, within reason, the first and foremost is to represent the people of the constituency as best as possible. I'd be a big believer in a lot of people in the middle, for the most part, are able to get on through life. It's the people who are at either end of life, the elderly and the young, and also disabled and carers. They really need concern and they need to be looked after, because it's the people who don't have a voice you try to give that voice to. I mean, a lot of the work of a county councillor can be quite... It's a great learning curve. I was slightly late coming in this morning. I was out checking, there was dumping going on in local forestry, so I was trying to get that resolved. I was also trying to solve a road issue for another lady. There's housing is a big issue at the moment, and trying to develop that and bring that up to national level as well. You make representation through the council for things that need to be done on that. I mean, you really could be here a long time. It's like... this is new to me, but I'm learning it as I go along, and I'm finding the experience very enjoyable. I have to say,
James, you were involved in the Leitrim Treasure Group, who helped counteract gold mining in the county. What was your main motivation behind this?
Well, Treasure Leitrim was the name of the group that was called. So about 3.5 years ago, this stage was November 2021, I think it was, we got noticed that companies were interested in doing gold mining in the area, in 47 townlands. There was three kind of specific hotspots where they were focused on, and one happened to be on land where we farm. So that straight away was, my ears pricked up. You hear gold mining and you think of that nice image of a guy down panning in the river. And I was like, Joanne, where's my hat? That's my wife. I'm going out the door. But no, we looked into it. And a lot of people in North Leitrim, because of our low population base and more importantly, the terrain and the type of land that's out there in the geology, there's a lot of what's called extractive industries looking at the area for what they can take out. So fracking was a big thing that went in the early... the 2000-2010, that kind of time, reared its head, and that's where they were looking to take frack gas out of the Loch Allen Basin, and that would have had huge ramifications for the local population and the local community. Not just now, I'd be a big believer as well, going back to your previous question about politics, it's about leaving the place better off for people who are coming after us, like I'm talking about 3, 4, 5 generations down the line. But to go back to the gold mining, when this came up, we looked into what gold mining actually has, how it's carried out. We used not best practice, we've seen what practice was there, and you looked at scientific data and how it's carried out. We used a place in Tyrone called Cavanagh Caw. It's a gold mine ran by the same company who were applying for this license. And we went up and looked at it. And when you went up and looked and you did your research, you realised that is not something that I personally would want next to near North Leitrim. It's a very ugly industry. They completely excavate the ground. It's called overcast mining before they go into the ground. And it leaves it looking like what's called a lunar landscape. But that aside, how they process the gold was the big thing. They use two chemicals, and either they're doing science in school, they use mercury and arsenic. No, they release arsenic when they do the mining and then do the blowing up the rock or whatever, but the name escaped me. It'll come back to me anyways. But what they do is they use these chemicals to, like a magnet, to attract the little gold particles out of the soil. And then when they've got it attracted out, they burn them off, and these chemicals then are left into what's called tailing ponds. So like they're big lakes full of mercury. And the other name just escapes me. It'll come to me. I've said it 101 times. But these guys are very, very dangerous. And they will get into water streams. And they actually, the water stream that I mentioned earlier on that was targeted on our particular area, it feeds into a river called the Bonnet, which feeds into Loch Gill. And do you know where Sligo Town gets most of its water? Loch Gill. So there's a whole connection there that people wouldn't be aware of. They think we don't want it there, but this is why you're trying to protect the water systems as well. I could go on about this for a while, as you can gather, but I leave it for the time being.
You're an ambassador. You're one of the few ambassadors for farming for nature. What is it like being an ambassador?
It's a great privilege to have been awarded that. It's a national award that comes from crowd, or should I say, for want of a better word, a group in Clare called Farmer for Nature, and they give out a certain amount of ambassadorships every year to farmers that they feel best fit their practices. The reason I got it was, and again, as I mentioned, I'm a farmer myself, I was using what's called virtual no-fence collars. They're GPS collars on cattle that we have that graze up on Highland commonage areas, and I was using it in a particular way to try and make the most of the Highland and to improve the grasses up there and the structure and all the variables that go with that, and also improve my pocket because I was able to keep more animals with the Dexter cattle I was using. And there was a whole balance with that. There was a girl who was doing a PhD on it as well, and she was seeing what they were eating and whatnot. That's one of the reasons I got awarded the Ambassador for Nature. I also would be a big believer in regenerative farmer, which is using small-scale farming on a very small area of land to produce a lot of food using good biological farming processes. I had 100 hens last year. I had 100 turkeys as well. I didn't have them this summer because I didn't have enough time with the council. But you farm them in such a way that it's a profitable job, but it also really improves the soil biology. And I got that. So I'm very proud to do that. Yeah. Very privileged.
Hi, James. What were some of the common issues brought up when you were campaigning door to door for the general election?
Hi, Shane. The general election, big issues in this area were housing first and foremost, or lack of it, should I say. Roads and infrastructure was a big problem. There was a lot of talk about the N17, which connects Sligo to, well, Galway eventually, but our end as far as the county mayor at Curry. people need to see that improved, and I would have to agree with that. Hospital services, that probably would be the main one, and health. I mean, Sligo needs to have their hospital standard status improved to a Model 4 level going forward, and that would have been the three main things. There are other issues that would be relevant to individuals when you come to the door, but as a collective, they'd be the ones that came up the most.
You weren't going to run in the local elections until December of last year. What made you want to run in them?
Yeah, I wasn't. And it's funny you should ask that, because people think that you have this all planned out. I really wasn't. Last December, local people from some of the different groups I mentioned, both neighbours and also from Treasure Leitrim and some local farmers, and just came to me and said, look, would you consider running? We think you'd be a good candidate for you know, representing our area. And if I'm honest, like, I kind of felt, I won't say duty is the word. To me, politics is actually really, really important. It's a very noble thing to put your hand up and say, look, I want to represent my area to the best of my ability. Often, and I think it's really important when you have young people listening in, that they're aware of that. If you listen to the media and if you watch TV, all you see is these guys giving out to each other all the time. Who's right? Who's wrong? And invariably, everyone is a wee bit right and probably a wee bit wrong. Politics is how we make decisions in this country. And it's really important to me that when you were asked to go for it, to consider it. So I did consider it, and it took a bit of mulling over because it is very time heavy. Like, as I said earlier on, what I'm learning, there are a whole load of issues that you have to deal with on a daily basis. The most important thing to me was my family. I have three young kids. They're 10, 9 and 5. And I want to see them developing as well as they can over the next few years. So I was conscious that you know, if to take this on, it wouldn't affect that. And my good wife, of course, as well, and family life. But there was something nagging at me. I kind of felt, I suppose you have to be careful with this. You're sort of blowing your own trumpet a bit. But I'd be good at it. And I suppose I was reared to believe you're as good as anyone and better than no one. But I guess when you're talking about politics, you kind of have to kind of say, well, look, I think I can be a good representative. I went out and I asked for votes and I got a good vote and I'm trying my best now. So yeah, we'll see where that leads us, but that's where the answer came to that question.
What were some of the biggest challenges faced by the Leitrim County Council after Storm Dara?
The electricity and water. So that's another aspect of being a councillor. You have to highlight these issues and you have to come on the media and you have to have your stuff and, you know, your facts right. I mean, you can't just go on waffling. Well, you can, but people will see through that fairly soon. But come back to the specific point. There was a lot of issues with trees falling, cutting out, especially in forests and Sitka spruce forests, and knocking out water lines, knocking out electricity lines, because the way leaves, which are the little roads that are supposed to be left for the power lines that are going through the forest, weren't suitable. That was the first thing. Then the knock-on effect for that, especially in South Leitrim and in North Leitrim too, but to a lesser effect, was when the electricity goes out, the generators which run our water pump stations, they stop working. So people were without water. So you're without water and you're without light. At the start of this conversation, I talked about how people in the middle can generally manage, and we can. But what about the elderly people who are on their own, or the invalided people who are on their own with no electricity and no water? That was two really big concerns that happened. Another one that also happened, it didn't occur as much this time, there's ash dieback is an issue that's going on. If you look at any of the trees along our roadways, these ash trees they're dead, unfortunately, due to a fungal disease that was brought in by the Department of Agriculture in 2000. And these are starting to fall, and they will fall more and more as time goes on, as the storm goes on. So that's something else that will be of issue. It was a small amount of issue in this particular storm, but just to highlight that as well.
Did your relation to Marion Harkin inspire you to become a politician yourself?
Might have put me off, I'd say, if it wouldn't inspire me. But no, it wouldn't. But I mean, again, as we talked about Marion earlier on, she's a great, great role model. She would be someone I would look up to, both personally and in political life. So to say that she would be an inspiration, that would be true. Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. But at the same time, I'd have to, you know, and she would have said this to me, James, when you go on, you will be running as James Kilmartin. Not as, you know, me, you know, I would align myself with a lot of her values, but it's important to, when you see it, you can be it. And you try and have good role models in life, and I would have to say she was an inspiration.
TY Radio, addressing the issues that matter for secondary school students.
Hi, I'm Matthew, back with TY Radio, and I am here interviewing my parents about how they listen to music before the advent of music streaming. For our first question, how did you commonly access music when you were younger, before internet streaming?
I would listen to the radio a lot, and that's how I would, find new music. Also, there were actually programs like Top of the Pops as well, which I would watch every week. Then when I found a band I liked, I would save up and buy the albums, and they would be on cassette or record. And you would be more likely to listen to whole albums. So you listen to music a different way at those times.
What kind of music genres do you listen to? And what, if you can name a few artists that you prefer, that are your favourite artists?
Now that I can use music streaming, I listen to a big variety of music. So rock, pop, even some jazz sometimes. Like I listen to a really wide variety. So I would like kind of music from maybe the 60s and 70s, like Bob Dylan, the Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, later bands, Manic Street Preachers, Smashing Pumpkins, Nirvana, a wide variety.
How did you commonly access music when you were younger before internet streaming?
I had to save up my pocket money when I was young, and then when I was working my wages, and go to the local record store in the town where I grew up on a Saturday and leaf through lots of vinyl albums. And that was my access to music, really, buying vinyl singles and albums.
Cool. What kind of music genres do you listen to, and what artists do you prefer? What artists are your favourites?
I listen to old gothic rock from the 1980s, and I listen to a genre called old-timey music, which is a sort of genre of country music from the Appalachians of America. And my favourite artists are Hank Williams III, Meredith Moon, gothic rock artists, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Mission, The Cult, Susie and the Banshees. Oh, and I like lots of ska bands from the 1980s as well, like The Selector and The Specials, Madness, Bad Manners, many genres.
Great. Well, thanks for being here on TY Radio.
TY Radio, addressing the issues that matter for secondary school students.
Hello, welcome back to TY Radio. My name is Greg Feeney, and I'm joined by Niall Willis, Owen Conway, and Head of Sport at Ocean FM, Austin O'Callaghan. How are you today, Austin?
I'm very well, Greg.
Would you mind if we asked you a few questions about the new football rules coming into play in the upcoming season?
Fire ahead.
The 1v1 throw-in is an interesting motion. What's your opinion on it, and what's your take on the two other midfielders starting on the sideline?
Well, I think Gaelic football has been crying out for change. That's what the supporters are telling us. That's what some of the players are telling us. Maybe not them all, but some. And privately, you probably will find some managers who would like a couple of changes to try and make the game more interesting to watch, one, but more enjoyable to play, two. So on the whole, I'm encouraged by a lot of the rule changes. The jury is still out on a couple of them. I understand why the 1v1 rule is introduced, to try and make that start of the match less cluttered and to make it more clean. So we have one midfielder standing in the middle of the pitch against his opponent, and the other midfielders stand out on the sideline. It looks a bit odd. It might be one they'll tweak in time, but I'm in favour of trying it to see if it does have the desired effect.
The second question, I think the kick-out is needed due to the short kick-outs, making the sport look boring. Do you think it's better for the keeper to kick out past the 40-metre line?
It's a tricky one. I mean, the role of the goalkeeper has become so important now in Gaelic football, and down to the extent that any club team will tell you, if the keeper doesn't have a decent kick out, they feel they're at a marked disadvantage already. Stephen Cluxton's the man who changed the face of goalkeeping. You know, people will signal other goalkeepers, but that's when it started really in a mainstream sense, and he turned it into an art form, and other goalkeepers have taken it on. I think there's still going to be a place for a mixture of short kickouts and long kickouts long term, but I do think it will help the game that you've got to boot it down clear rather than be obsessed with this restart, which is about retaining possession at all times and keeping the ball. But that's one of the factors that has made the game a bit more monotonous. So I think in time that rule will find a balance that will allow a certain amount of short restarts still have a role to play in Gaelic football. But the place to start is probably by sending, you've got to send it out past the 45. So let's start from there. I think we'll run into teething problems with that one. And managers, if they haven't devised them already, are going to come up with ideas to circumvent this in time. So I think that was one that will get a wee bit of tweaking as we go along.
And do you think it should be further past 40-metre line, maybe a 50-metre?
No, I think the 45 feels like the right place for now. Let's see. In terms of it makes it a cleaner restart. I mean, you guys are too young, but I'm a 1980s kid, so I started watching Gaelic football when I was seven in 1980, and I can remember every single kick-out was put your toe behind it and drive it as long as you can. That was the way, and then it was about high fielding. I hope it reinvigorates the art of the high catch, the clean catch, where possible. So a long kick out will lend itself to that. I'd like to think we'll see a bit more of that more regularly. But I still think there's probably going to be a bit of tweaking done around the restart to try and give the best of both worlds, the short restart and the long one. I think there'll be a bit of work done on that yet.
And could you update us for everyone listening, the role of the keeper and the build-up play?
The role of the keeper, I probably can't. I still have to do homework on this in terms of what the goalkeeper's going to have to do. Last Monday night, the GEA held an online webinar for all club coaches, managers around the country who are interested to log on, and they went through the various rules. Eamon Fitzmaurice, the former Kerry manager who was part of the Football Review Committee, was in on the webinar, as were other committee members. And that raised a lot of interesting questions, because the role of the goalkeeper has changed quite a bit in recent years. I don't think we want to neuter the goalkeeper completely. He's still got to have a role in an impact, because it has made the goalkeeping role more dynamic and more skillful. I think there's a lot to be admired by that. There was a time where the guy who wasn't much of an outfield player was put in goals, so we put him in goals. That's changed now. You still need a dynamic all-rounder to play in goals. So I have a bit of Christmas homework to do, Niall, on the rules, certainly for when we come to do commentaries in the new year, that we're completely au fait with all the aspects of each rule, because while there are seven main rule changes, there's probably about 19 or 20 actual alterations in terms of how it affects play.
What's your opinion on the new scoring system for 2 points?
Yeah, I've heard people say they don't like this. I do like that. I think we should reward long-range point kicking. So the modern game became obsessed with you don't score, and I still see it in club football in Sligo, where players have the ball 35 metres out and you can hear opposing mentors say, he's been told not to score from there, he won't shoot, he'll work it in closer to the scoring area, the scoring arc. And I think that hampers Sligo Gaelic footballers and club footballers around the country. That if guys grew up being good at shooting, they should still be encouraged to shoot. So I think there should be a reward for a long-range point, and it should be a second point. There are a lot of people who don't agree with this one and would like this one chinned. But I think we should reward players who have the confidence and the ability to go for a long-range score. So I like that one, and I hope they don't tweak it, but I fear there might be a move down the track to tweak it.
Thanks, Austin. I'll hand you over to Owen Carver now.
What do you think of the new rule for four-point goals?
I think I like it. I think I like it. I think the goal should be a bigger reward. Although I suppose I feel 3 points for a goal is ample a reward. So I probably would have stuck with the 3 points for a goal. But if it's going to generate more attack-minded play and less, if these rules help change the footballer's mentality, which I think now has become, and I think you might disagree with me, in Coláiste Íosca or in Íosca, from under 14 or 15, there is a growing sense of whatever you do, don't give away the ball. That's the worst thing you can do. Rather than have a cut, half a goal, break a tackle, try the long ball in quick, have a pot shot or go low. If it encourages more attack-minded play, then I'm in favour of it. I'm not sure we needed to make the goal a four-pointer. I think a three-pointer is still a big reward for going under the crossbar.
What do you think of teams not being able to bring three people back from the full forward line, so teams can only have 12 players behind the ball rather than 15?
I absolutely agree with this. I'd have more in the other half if I was allowed. I'd have more than three. I mean, I think this is a good thing. I think we've got it. Like, the forwards have got to be forwards. We are all conditioned now that a full forward line are also defenders. And yeah, I mean, you do have to defend them, start to come in. But I think the attacking three can be defenders in the opponent's half. Let's keep them up there. Let's spread the play. I think it can only help the game. And I'm completely in favour of keeping at least three. I would even say let's have a couple more than three in the other half to keep the game open. But club and county managers might beg to differ.
How do you think these rules will work out at underage levels?
I'm not sure. I think the person I feel has the biggest job is the club referee, the county referee. County referees are going to have a bit more help because there's more attention on the game, and I think teething problems there will be sorted out. For club referees, I think they've got their hands full. I think the rules are well-intentioned, and I agree with the spirit of inter-county rule changes have got to filter down. It's got to be the same for all levels of our game. But I think it's going to be a tough management process for club referees to keep on top of all of this. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of carnage in the first half of the club season, where there's a lot of disquiet when we hear about there was carnage at this game, the ref didn't know what he was at or she was at. It's not that they don't know what they're at. It's going to take a while to implement the rules. And we may discover that club referees need a bit of help in implementing some of the rule changes, and there may have to be a couple of tweaks to help the referee there. So I think there's going to be a little bit of patience needed among the players, their management team, the parents, to help as we learn to work. I think there may be unforeseen things we haven't thought of yet that might come into play in club games that might just be little sticking points in the first half of the club season. But I'm hoping that players and management will have patience. Will they have patience, lads?
But yeah, I think referees do need help in the game, and you're right on that fact. But thank you very much for answering our questions today, and great to get your opinion on the new Gaelic rules. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
TY Radio on Ocean FM.
Hello and welcome back to TY Radio. My name is Matthew and I'm here with Steve Wickham, a renowned and award-winning electric violinist who has performed with the likes of U2 and Bob Dylan and is based here in Sligo. Hi Steve, it's great to have you here. And we'll start off with our first question.
Your most recent solo album, Beekeeper, released on digital, CD and vinyl. How did you find getting an album released on vinyl? Was the process easy or hard?
Hello, Orly. All right. Pleased to be here about you as well on your show. The process for releasing vinyl has got more difficult because it's very difficult to find manufacturers that make the vinyl. But for me, there was a team involved. So there was a team involved in London that did a lot of the work. I just had to concentrate on making the music for it. Took me a couple of years to write all the tunes and songs. And then when I had them all together, whether it was on vinyl or whether it was on digital or whether it was on tape or whatever format, CD, it doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of sourcing a proper manufacturer, and they're popping up all over the place now.
How does living in Sligo inspire you when it comes to creating music?
Well, I find Sligo is a very inspiring place because of its natural beauty, relative calmness. It's a pastoral environment, not an urban environment. So a lot of nature inspiration for me. It's a place I call home. Somehow you want, as an artist, you make different kind of art when you're based at home. Also, it's been a very creative milieu for some great poets and painters throughout the year. W.B. Yeats wrote a lot of his poems here in Sligo or about Sligo. So it has a kind of a magical element. Magical is a word that I don't use lightly. I suppose it's kind of a beauty.
You performed with the Waterboys, helping to create multiple successful songs and albums, such as This Is the Sea. How did you find working with the band as opposed to working solo?
Well, it's like any collaborative project, as you know yourself. When two heads are better than one, many heads are better than many heads. So when you get together with a group of artists, there's a lot of input. There's a very broad range of expression. And I think you can, there's Whereas on your solo, on my solo thing, it's a very much a kind of more of a lonely task to a certain extent. Although there were a lot of people that helped me on my solo record. I had a lot of singers and friends that came in and played different instruments. So in effect, it wasn't a band. But keeping a band together is more than just the performing thing. It's recording, performing, staying friends, finding enough work for everybody to do. And so there's a different dynamic involved in a band.
How did it feel when you performed with the band after you had officially left in 1990?
I should put a bit of history into it. So I joined the band in 1985, so kind of like light years away. And I was there, I was about 24 or 5 years of age, and I joined the band. I was there for 5 years, and then I left in 1990. And I moved to the west of Ireland actually around that time to bring my family up here in the west of Ireland. I was away for about 10 years, and myself and the singer Mike Scott from the Waterboys has always been friendly, and he asked me to get involved with a project again about the year 2000. And then it felt good to be back playing again, playing those old songs that we had recorded many albums together. So it felt very natural to be back actually in 2000 after being away.
You have performed with stars such as U2 and Sinead O'Connor. Do you find it nerve-wracking to meet such famous people and work with them on projects?
Well, you know, for me, I was living in Dublin, very close to where Bono lived at the time. So I'd see him around on the bus, and it was just this guy who dressed in cowboy boots and flashy clothes and got on the bus. So he didn't seem very particularly famous. He wasn't famous at all at the time. He played in my school with his band. So I wasn't starstruck when I met Bono. I was very impressed by his talent and his creative vision for his band, U2 at the time. They were very, very dedicated to what they were doing. That was very impressive. The same with Sinead. I knew Sinead when she was in school, so she wasn't famous at the time. She was, you know, she's about your age, actually, about 15 or 16. And she was a beautiful singer and had a lovely voice. And I just thought, she's got a great talent. And I have met famous people. And sometimes, yes, I am starstruck. All right, same as that. When you get along with, especially people doing the same job as you, musicians, it doesn't matter whether it's who it is. You're actually creating the same work. And so you find a place where it's comfortable to be with somebody who's doing the same thing as you, I think.
Do you feel threatened by the increasingly growing status of AI as an artist working in the creative industry?
I don't feel threatened. I know there are some of my colleagues out there who feel threatened by it. I think AI is a fantastic tool and an inevitability of humans' cleverness. It is changing how we work, though, in the sense that somebody can make a violin soundtrack on a record using AI that will sound incredibly real. So, and it's also very less expensive. So if somebody wants to get a nice violin on the record, they can just program in a violin track and make it sound so. So it's less expensive than hiring a musician to fly all the way to a studio in London or wherever it is. So I don't feel threatened, because I think that it's just a tool. It's like asking me if I'm a farmer, am I threatened by a spade? You know, because a spade will dig the ground. I'm not threatened by a spade. How do you feel about it? Can I ask you? How do you feel about AI?
It's advancing really fast. And honestly, I think a bit faster than we can keep up with. It's going to get to a point where there's barely a job that AI can't do. I know I don't want to be boys like, oh well, AI is going to take all our jobs, but I mean, there really is, like, there's going to be a point where it surpasses us.
Do you feel, as a musical artist living in Sligo, that the music industry pays you and other artists fairly enough to support your needs?
That's a tough question. It's a big question. There's lots of elements in that. I know that the government are trying to bring in a scheme now that is a kind of an artist support scheme. And there are other countries like France provide a kind of a backup wage for artists, so that when you're not working or you're not gigging or playing concerts, the government is paying you. It's a very difficult thing to be an artist, whatever field you're in, whether it's music, visual art, theatre or writing. You find that a lot of people have other jobs. I know a lot of my colleagues have jobs teaching, for example, that allows you to pay a mortgage and pay the rent and pay the electricity bills. I've been very lucky, been very, very fortunate, because I got working with, you know, fairly young with people like you two and Sinead O'Connor and that. So I'm never out of work as a musician. So I have been very fortunate. I know that a lot of my colleagues haven't been as fortunate, and they do struggle to survive, yes, by music alone. It is possible to do it. It's very difficult in the west of Ireland. It's easier in big urban environments where there's lots of concert halls, lots of venues, lots of events happening. It's much easier to make a living at it. In the rural west of Ireland, it's not so easy. So a lot of my colleagues have to teach.
Thank you very much for being here with us today. We'll get back with you with more TY Radio.
TY Radio on Ocean FM.
Hello and welcome back to TY Radio. This is Owen Conway and I'm joined by Niall Willis and Greg Feeney. Firstly, Niall will talk to you about sheep prices and information. Secondly, Greg will talk to you about the Mercosur deal. And lastly, I will be talking to you about dairy farming.
I think the most disappointing part to sheep is the wool market. There can be so much use for the wool, such as insulation, clothes and horse rugs. It costs more to get a sheep shear nowadays to shear the sheep after you get your money worth for the wool. So basically, the government need to up the price for farmers for them to earn some well-earned cash. Dog attacks is another big problem for farmers. It's so sad to see animals getting killed, especially when farmers paid for the animals and for shearing, dipping, dosing, etc. It's simply not good enough and people need to keep their dogs closely monitored. The rising cost is by far the biggest problem. In fairness, with all the grants now, it's not too bad as a few years ago, but it's still not good enough. In the future, there isn't going to be near as many farmers due to the prices to even buy land and concrete and steel for the sheds. That's without even buying the sheep or fertilizer for the land. There is so much cost in farming, especially if you're only starting up. There should be upping the grants for farmers to make it easier. The people who feed the country should have been shown respect for what they do for everyone.
Hello, my name is Greg Feeney. I'll be talking to you about the Mercosur deal. The Mercosur deal is a trade and political agreement between the European Union and the Mercosur bloc, which includes Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay and Uruguay. The agreement aims to create one of the world's largest free trade areas by reducing tariffs and trade barriers between the two regions. Here are the key points of the deal. The deal seeks to eliminate tariffs on various goods, including agricultural products, industrial goods and services. The EU is focused on accessing numerous agricultural products like beef, poultry and soy, while the Mercosur countries want greater access to EU markets for industrial goods, machinery and chemicals. Market access. Both regions gain improved access to each other's markets. For example, the EU will be able to export cars, pharmaceuticals and machinery to the Mercosur countries more easily, while Mercosur will get better access for agricultural exports like wine, cheese, meat to the EU. Sustainability and standards. The agreement includes provisions aimed at promoting environmental protection, sustainable development and labour rights. Both regions committed to upholding the Paris Agreement on climate change and enforcing labour laws. Economic growth. This deal is expected to increase trade and investment flows between the two regions, contributing to economic growth, job creation and modernisation of industries. In summary, the Mercosur deal is a landmark trade agreement aimed at boosting trade and ties, enhancing markets between the two major global regions and a focus on free trade, sustainability and cooperation.
Hello, I'm Owen and I'm here today to talk to you about dairy farming and young people. It is awful hard for young people who don't come from a farming background to get into dairy farming. This is because it is so expensive for land. Young people are trying to begin farming but don't have enough money to afford land, stock, facilities for stock. It is very expensive to feed stock as prices for diesel and machinery has gone up. This affects them because of contractors. they cost more money to get in to do silage and hay. This makes it very hard for young people to afford all of this. This causes people to take out loans. They then struggle to pay the loans back to the banks. When they can't pay the loans back, the banks repossess their land and machinery. Dairy farming is very high demanding on physical health. It requires long hours and high determination to keep all stock healthy and dosed.
And that concludes our farming coverage. Thanks to Greg and Owen, from myself, Niall. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to TY Radio on Ocean FM.
Welcome to TY Radio. I'm James Broderick, and I'm here with Conor Hare and Shane Hambray. I'm here to discuss who we believe is the greatest professional soccer player of all time. We turn to Shane first to illustrate his views on the matter.
I believe that Lionel Messi is the greatest football player of all time, as he is the most decorated player of all time, with 45 trophies, with many accolades throughout his career, such as 8 Ballon d'Ors and 8 times being named the world's best player by FIFA. Messi holds the records for most European golden shoes, most goals for a single club, most goals, most hat-tricks and most assists in La Liga. Messi has scored over 850 senior goals for club and country. He is most well defined by his ability on the ball, taking on many opponents before scoring, which he has shown many times throughout his career. He's extremely well-rounded footballer, being able to score from close range, from distance, with both feet and with his head. His brilliant skills and gigantic success is why I believed him to be the greatest football player of all time.
I think Cristiano Ronaldo is best ever due to his extraordinary skill, consistency and work ethic. He used to spend countless hours refining his skills, whether it's perfecting his free kicks, improving his fitness or working on his technique. He also used to stick to a strict diet with a diet plan from his chef. He used to eat 6 meals a day, which were very healthy and full of nutrition. He also has many achievements, such as goal-scoring records, 5 Ballon d'Ors and multiple titles, including 5 Champions Leagues, 3 Premier Leagues and 1 European Championship with his country, Portugal. His physical attributes, mental toughness and ability to perform in crucial moments makes him a footballing legend.
I believe that Messi is the greatest footballer alongside Shane, as I think that Messi has a very good amount of trophies won. He's won 10 league titles with Barcelona, 4 Champions Leagues, 3 Super Cups, 3 Club World Cups, 7 Spanish Cups, and along with numerous other team and individual honours. Messi also scored 91 goals in the calendar year 2012, which is a Guinness World Record and the most ever recorded in football history. Lionel Messi has also won 2 trophies for his country, the Copa America, which is a South American equivalent of the European Championships, and he's also won a World Cup in 2022 with his country. So that's why I think Messi is the best football player of all time.
TY Radio, addressing the issues that matter for secondary school students.
Hello, I'm Conor O'Hare. Just over 2 weeks ago, the general election took place. 4 TDs were returned in the Sligo Leitrim constituency. There have been calls for the voting age to be reduced to 16, and if that was the case, we would be voting now and having a say in who is sitting in the government in Leinster House. So what is the interest like among our TY group in the Irish political system? Only one way to find out.
Did you follow the general election 2 weeks ago?
No, not really.
Can you tell me 4 candidates who were elected in Sligo Leitrim?
Frank Feehan, Martin Kenny, Marion Harkin and Eamon Scanlon.
Did you know any unsuccessful candidates?
Nessa Cosgrove and Adele McSherry.
Does politics connect with people our age?
I don't think so, no.
Is politics a subject you would like to study at school?
We learnt a bit about the government in CSB. I might like to learn more about the parties.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
Not at the minute, because we're not educated on politics enough in school.
Are you confident that you will find a job after school is finished or college in Ireland?
I'm sure there's jobs, just maybe not well-paying ones.
Do you agree with gender balance in politics? At least 40% of candidates that a party puts forward must be female.
I think whoever's best for the job should be put forward, but both men and women should be involved in picking who runs.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
I think people over 18 are the only ones who really care about politics anyways, but maybe.
Did you follow the general election 2 weeks ago?
No.
Can you tell me four candidates who were elected in Sligo Leitrim?
No.
Do you know any unsuccessful candidates?
I know Adel McSharry.
Does politics connect with people our age?
I think so, yes, because I think since we all live in our own democracy, we should be allowed that politics is really relevant to us because, well, we live in the country just like everybody else.
Is politics a subject you would like to study in school?
Yeah, because I'd like to be more educated and have more knowledge about the political parties and what actually is like going on in the country, in the political world.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
I don't think so, no, because people at the age of 16 are still really easily manipulated by social media sites like TikTok, Instagram, things like that. People can play on the emotions of 16-year-olds, things like that, and that make it kind of a bit of a flawed system, in my opinion.
Are you confident that you'll find a job after you finish school or college in Ireland?
Not really, because I've heard a lot of bad things from adults that I know about the job market in Ireland, and a lot of the jobs don't pay very well. They're just not available at all.
Do you agree with gender balance in politics?
I think so, yeah.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
I think so, yeah, because for young politicians, the policies they're putting forward are more relevant to them, so be more relevant to us, just as a group, young people.
Did you follow the general election 2 weeks ago?
Parts of it, yeah.
Do you know any unsuccessful candidates?
Adel McSharry, Malie Casserly and Michael Clark.
Is politics a subject you would like to study at school?
Yes, I think it would be a very interesting subject.
Are you confident that you will find a job after you finish school or college in Ireland?
Not completely, but I hope that in the coming few years that will change.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
Yes, I think so, because I think they'd be able to relate to them a bit more.
Can you tell me four candidates who were elected in the Sligo Leitrim?
Eamon Scanlon, Martin Kenny, Frank Feehan and Harkin.
Does politics connect to people our age?
I think they do, yeah.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
I think it should be, yeah, because then young people under the age of 16 are affected, so they get of.
Do you agree with gender balance in politics?
I do, yeah, but I think that the better candidates should be put forward for the elections.
Did you follow the general election 2 weeks ago?
I did a bit, yes.
Did you know any unsuccessful candidates?
Michael Clare.
Is politics a subject you would like to study at school?
No, because it's very complicated.
Are you confident that you will find a job after you finish school or college in Ireland?
Yes, because there is lots of work around my area and I work as of now.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
Yes, as they are more relevant to people around my age.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
I think so, yeah, because they'd have a first-person experience and be able to involve younger people.
Are you confident that you will find a job after you finish school or college in Ireland?
I think so.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
No, because I think they're just too immature.
Is politics a subject you'd like to study at school?
No, because I think I have enough work to do.
Does politics connect with people our age?
I think so, yes.
Did you know any unsuccessful candidates in the recent general election?
No.
Do you agree with gender balance in politics?
Yes, partly, but I think the best candidate should just be put forward for the party.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
No, it should not be lowered to 16, as people haven't fully matured yet.
Is politics a subject you'd like to study at school?
Yes, I would like to study politics because it would replace more useless subjects of art and that.
Does politics connect with people our age?
Not particularly, no, because it's very bit confusing and it's not taught to us.
Did you know any unsuccessful candidates in the recent general election 2 weeks ago?
Michael Clark.
Can you tell me four candidates who were elected in Sligo Leitrim?
Frank Feehan, Eamon Scanlon, Marion Harkin and Martin Kennedy.
Did you follow the general election 2 weeks ago?
I did.
Can you tell me four candidates who were elected in Sligo Leitrim?
Martin Kenny, Frank Feehan, Eamon Scanlon and Marion Harkin.
Did you know any unsuccessful candidates?
Marie Casserly.
Does politics connect with people our age?
No.
Is politics a subject you like to study at school?
No, I wasn't much interest in it, no.
Should the voting age be lowered to 16?
I don't think so, no. I wouldn't say they're mature enough to vote.
Are you confident that you will find a job after you finish school or college in Ireland?
Yep, relatively confident, yeah.
Do you agree with gender balance in politics?
No, because you should put your best candidates forward as opposed to having it evenly split between women and men.
Would more young politicians make politics more relevant to younger people?
It would, yeah, because they have similar ideas as us. And they'd be a bit more relative to us, so...
You're listening to TY Radio on Ocean FM.
Welcome back to TY Radio. My name is Eliora.
And I am Matthew.
It's Christmas time. The holiday season is in full swing and there's no escaping Christmas songs.
They are everywhere in shops and restaurants. They are on the radio non-stop. There is even a radio station that plays nothing, only Christmas music.
So what are the favourite Christmas songs of our TY colleagues? To find out, we conducted the following interviews.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
Yes, sometimes.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Christmas Wrapping by The Waitresses.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
Rockin' Round the Christmas Tree.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas because we used to play it at family get-togethers.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
Sometimes in school.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Probably one of the Home Alones.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
I do.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Driving Home for Christmas.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day.
What Christmas song brings back happy memories?
Last Christmas.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
I don't.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Home Alone.
Did you ever perform in a Christmas nativity play?
No.
Did you ever perform in a Christmas nativity play?
Yeah.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Die Hard.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
No.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
None really, to be honest.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
All I Want for Christmas Is You.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Jingle Bell Rock.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
Not very often, no.
Did you ever perform in a Christmas nativity play?
I did, yeah.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Probably Die Hard.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
I don't, do not.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
None really, no, to be fully honest with you.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
Fairytale New York.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Fairytale New York.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
I do, surely.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
Yeah.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Fairytale New York.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
Fairy Tale New York.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, Presents Under a Christmas Tree. I suppose that's it.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
I do, yes.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Fairy Tale New York.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
Last Christmas.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
I don't know, none really.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
No.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Home Alone.
Did you ever perform in a Christmas nativity play?
I did, yes.
Do you listen to Christmas music?
Yes, I do.
What is your favourite Christmas song?
Last Christmas.
What Christmas song do you most like to sing along to?
Underneath the Tree.
What Christmas songs bring back happy memories and why?
Fairy Tale in New York.
Do you attend Christmas carol singing?
In school, yes.
What is your favourite Christmas movie?
The Holiday.
Did you ever perform in a Christmas nativity play?
Yes, I did.
TY Radio on Ocean FM.
Hello, my name is Greg Feeney. Hopefully you enjoyed our show. We really enjoyed the entire media experience. Finally, can I wish each and every one of you listening on the radio or online anywhere in the world a very happy and peaceful Christmas. Goodbye.